Chapter 2 Morris's mother lived near London, in a comfortable villa among some pines. There he and his sisters had been born, and thence his father had gone up to business every day, thither returning. They nearly left when the church was built, but they became accustomed to it as to everything, and even found it a convenience. Church was the only place Mrs. Hall had to go to, the shops delivered. The station was not far either, nor was a tolerable day school for the girls. It was a land of facilities where nothing had to be striven for, and success was indistinguishable from failure. Morris liked his home, and recognized his mother as its presiding genius. Without her there would be no soft chairs, or food, or easy games, and he was grateful to her for providing so much, and loved her. He liked his sisters also. When he arrived, they ran out with cries of joy, took off his greatcoat, and dropped it for the servants on the floor of the hall. It was nice to be the centre of attraction, and show off about school. His Guatemala stamps were admired, so were those holy fields, and a Holbein photograph that Mr. Ducey had given him. After tea, the weather cleared, and Mrs. Hall put on her galoshes and walked with him round the grounds. They went kissing one another and conversing aimlessly.
"Morrie? Mummy? Now I must give my Morrie a lovely time. Where's George? Such a splendid report from Mr. Abrahams. He says you remind him of your poor father. Now, what shall we do these holidays? I like here best. Darling boy." She embraced him more affectionately than ever. "There is nothing like home, as everyone finds. Yes, tomatoes." She liked reciting the names of vegetables. "Tomatoes, radishes, broccoli, onions." "Tomatoes, broccoli, onions, purple potatoes, white potatoes," droned the little boy. "Turnip tops." "Mother, where's George?"
"He left last week."
"Why did George leave?" he asked.
"He was getting too old. Howell always changes the boy every 2 years."
"Oh." "Turnip tops," she continued. "Potatoes again, beetroot. Morrie, how would you like to pay a little visit to Grandpapa and Aunt Ida if they ask us? I want you to have a very nice time this holiday, dear. You have been so good. But then, Mr. Abrahams is such a good man. You see, your father was at his school, too. We are sending you to your father's old public school, too, Sunnington, in order that you may grow up like your dear father in every way." A sob interrupted her.
"Morrie, darling!" The little boy was in tears. "My pet, what is it?" "I don't know. I don't know. Why, Morris!"
He shook his head. She was grieved at her failure to make him happy, and began to cry too. The girls ran out, exclaiming,
"Mother, what's wrong with Morris?"
"Oh, don't," he wailed. "Kitty, get out!"
"He's overtired," said Mrs. Hall, her explanation for everything. "I'm overtired." "Come to your room, Morrie. Oh, my sweet, this is really too dreadful." "No, I'm all right."
He clenched his teeth, and a great mass of sorrow that had overwhelmed him by rising to the surface began to sink. He could feel it going down into his heart until he was conscious of it no longer.
"I'm all right."
He looked around him fiercely and dried his eyes.
"I'll play Halmer, I think."
Before the pieces were set, he was talking as before. The childish collapse was over. He beat Ada, who worshipped him, and Kitty, who did not, and then ran into the garden again to see the coachman.
"How do you do, Howell? How's Mrs. Howell? How do you do, Mrs. Howell?"
and so on, speaking in a patronizing voice, different from that he used to gentlefolks. Then altering back,
"Isn't it a new garden boy?"
"Yes, Master Morris."
"Was George too old?"
"No, Master Morris, he wanted to better himself."
"Oh, you mean he gave notice?"
"That's right."
"Mother said he was too old and you gave him notice."
"No, Master Morris."
"My poor woodstacks will be glad,"
said Mrs. Howell. Morris and the late garden boy had been used to play about in them.
"They're mother's woodstacks, not yours,"
said Morris, and went indoors. The Howells were not offended, though they pretended to be so to one another. They had been servants all their lives, and liked a gentleman to be a snob.
"He has quite a way with him already," they told the cook. "More like his father."
The Barrys, who came to dinner, were of the same opinion. Dr. Barry was an old friend, or rather neighbour, of the family, and took a moderate interest in them. No one could be deeply interested in the Halls. Kitty he liked. She had hints of grit in her, but the girls were in bed, and he told his wife afterwards that Morris ought to have been there too. And stop there all his life as he will, like his father. What is the use of such people? When Morris did go to bed, it was reluctantly. That room always frightened him. He had been such a man all the evening, but the old feeling came over him as soon as his mother had kissed him good night. The trouble was the looking-glass. He did not mind seeing his face in it, nor casting a shadow on the ceiling, but he did mind seeing his shadow on the ceiling reflected in the glass. He would arrange the candle so as to avoid the combination, and then dare himself to put it back and be gripped with fear. He knew what it was. It reminded him of nothing horrible, but he was afraid. In the end, he would dash out the candle and leap into bed. Total darkness he could bear, but this room had the further defect of being opposite a street lamp. On good nights, the light would penetrate the curtains unalarmingly, but sometimes blots like skulls fell over the furniture. His heart beat violently, and he lay in terror with all his household close at hand. As he opened his eyes to look whether the blots had grown smaller, he remembered George. Something stirred in the unfathomable depths of his heart. He whispered, "George! George!" Who was George? Nobody. Just a common servant. Mother and Ada and Kitty were far more important. But he was too little to argue thus. He did not even know that when he yielded to this sorrow, he overcame the spectral and fell asleep.